Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudi Ogawaza, and for today, we are getting into a conversation, around something that affects many people in South Africa, and that is the issue of credit. You know, where do we stand now? What's actually happening in the market? What are some of the big drivers? And to make sense of it all, we are joined by Regan Adams. He is the CEO of RCS, and we're just going to have a conversation, as I said, about the state of South Africa's retail credit and loans market. Regan, greetings to you today.
Good morning, Mandiwa. Happy to be here and share with the listeners.
So, maybe where we can begin for today, before we get into, you know, some of the big drivers, store cards, all of this stuff. Maybe we can start by locating ourselves right now in the week that we're in. This is the week in which we have had a presidential inauguration in South Africa. There's a new administration that is coming in. South Africa has probably one of the more mature credit systems on the African continent, and I think across emerging markets as well. And a lot, has been said about, the ability to have a functional credit system. How do you see the upcoming administration, because the economy is such a big thing that's in the spotlight? How does, where we are right now, the consumer market, macro, all of this, how is that shaping the credit market, where we are right now?
Well, look, I think, to have a healthy credit market, there are certain mechanics that need to be in place. You need to have very robust credit regulation, which we do have. You need to have a market where people are into jobs and they have employment, which is clearly an area that South Africa needs to improve on. We need to have an economy that's growing, which we know is challenged at the moment. All these factors need to be prevalent for us to have a healthy credit market where, consumers are able to enter into commerce. We know that we're coming in off an environment where inflation was high. I mean, it's moderated now more. It's more reasonable, although we know that everyone's basket is not the same. And then, of course, interest rates are a big component, especially when it comes to credit, and we are at a high. So it's forecasted that rates will decrease probably in the latter half of this year. I think that makes credit more affordable. I think people that are leveraged across mortgages, vehicle finance, they've had a very difficult time because interest rates have grown to higher than pre-COVID levels. So anyone that's got exposure in those categories, that's been a very challenging period for those individuals because your salary only increases by about inflation. So we're looking forward to an environment in the future where we have a growing economy. We've got more people into jobs because you need to be employed. You need to earn a salary to be able to have credit. And then we, the surrounding environment to have a strong retail market where depends on interest rates that are reasonable, inflation that is moderate. Then we should be able to extend credit more sustainably.
Regan, do you think people in South Africa perhaps take the fact that we have so much credit that is readily available for granted? Because as we said earlier on, in many parts of the world, particularly in emerging markets, access to credit is a very hard thing, to come about. And as you were talking, what becomes clear is the fact that you have to have so many things in place to have a robust credit system in place. You have to have that formal sector in place. You have to have those jobs. You have to have a healthy retail market. You have to have all of these things.
Yeah. Yes. It's a very great point that you raise, because if we just look at the African market, it's South Africa, has a benefit of a couple of things which is not necessarily prevalent in other markets. For example, the fact that we have a national ID system. It may sound quite basic, but we have one ID, hopefully, that is related to one individual. Now, in some of the African markets, they have multiple ID systems. So if you can't identify someone to start off with, you're not really able to make an effective assessment. The other thing that we have going for us, and I mean, South Africa, I mean, you're mentioning being advanced relative to emerging markets, but even advanced relative to developed markets, we've had a credit bureau. We've been one of the first three or four in the world that had a credit bureau that have both positive and negative data. Now, what does that mean? Many credit bureaus across the world, and in Africa in particular, only have data on people that don't pay, but they don't have data on people that pay. So we've had a credit bureau that's got both what's called positive and negative data. And then also by law, you credit providers need to provide all the information to the credit bureau, and everybody is a participant in the regulated market. They need to provide information of their customers, their conduct on their accounts back to the credit bureau, and this is all regulated. Now, these kind of things you don't have in other markets, which means that it's a lot more difficult to assess individuals for credit. It's a lot more difficult to identify individuals that you want to extend credit to. So your starting point was, do we take it for granted? I think South Africans have come to know the system. They don't know, relative to other markets, that actually it's quite an advanced system that's allowed us to be able to have the market that we have today.
And against that backdrop, then, as you were talking, one of the things I was thinking about is I had opportunity to be in a place like India just last year. And one of the big things that you appreciate about it when you talk to people in the country, both in business as well as in the public sector, is the fact that there's been a huge drive since about 2015, 2016, I think, somewhere there, to try and get people, a digital ID system, you know, to make sure that everyone in the population has an ID, because the goal was they wanted everyone in the country to have a bank account, but they realized that before you can have a bank account, you must have the basics.
An ID system.
Exactly, the basics, which for KYC, which is an ID.
Yes.
So yeah. I think it is interesting to think about all of the things that need to be in place to have some of these things happening, and as well as the positive and negative data aspect mm-hmm. that you're talking about, you know. So it's very, very interesting. It reminds me of the fact that in places like the US, people are still signing checks.
Yes. No, it's the market dynamics interesting. And, RCS being part of BNP Paribas, which is obviously one of the largest European consumer finance businesses and banks in the world. The benefit I have often is to engage with my colleagues in other territories, whether it's Spain or Italy or the UK and so on. And then you realize also just that South Africa, actually relative to these developed markets, really are very well governed, very well positioned from a consumer credit perspective. I mentioned the regulation before. We've got regulations in South Africa now since the adoption of the National Credit Act, where we don't just assess somebody's willingness to pay, which is really what the credit bureau tells you with this, how somebody conducts their account. But we also have to assess people's ability to pay, which is where we need to do affordability assessments, where you take someone's income and expenses into account. But it's not just that you take their income into account. You also have to verify that they are earning that income through a bank statement and a payslip. And I can tell you, other markets, developed markets, they don't have that. And we've been asked many times to explain our affordability assessments. And you can see later on in certain geographies, they started adopting these kind of things. Now the fact, there is an argument that comes in that it's very advanced, very sophisticated piece of regulation, but is it too sophisticated for our market? You know, is it too sophisticated for certain portions of our market? I mean, you're talking about bank accounts. We know that we've got quite a big unbanked sector in South Africa and in Africa. And if you have to provide bank statement, but you're not banked, you know, it's quite difficult then to enter this kind of market, even though you could obviously have a salary and so on. So, you know, there's also a kind of a double-edged sword when it comes to having sophisticated regulations, because on the one side, you can have very robust regulation to curb reckless lending or to make sure people aren't over-indebted. But the other side of the coin is, are you limiting access to credit because you are relying on all of these things? And if it's too complicated, do you then, you know, fuel the unregulated market because people just don't want to engage with all the requirements?
Yeah, it is quite an interesting discussion to get into, and maybe we can touch, you know, on it in a bit. But before that, though, maybe you could also help us to contextualize, you know, when we talk about the credit market in South Africa, how big is that market? You know, how many millions, billions, or trillions are we talking about? And where does RCS play in that particular ecosystem?
Thank you. Yes, I mean, you're talking about big, it is a more than 2 trillion rand market. So it is massive. Obviously, you know, they are, when you look at the size of the market, you could look at the size in terms of the value of outstandings, which is really the debt, or you can look at the size of the number of consumers. And it actually paints a very different picture when you look at these two dimensions. So if you look at the size of the market, which is just, there's more than 2 trillion that I mentioned, the majority of that size is made up of mortgages and vehicle finance. And that's intuitive because those are typically bigger loan sizes. I mean, you're talking for houses, it can be millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions. Whereas if you look at a credit card or a personal loan, we're talking about tens of thousands. So you can then, obviously, clearly the value of outstandings would be more in the secured lending side, which is, as I mentioned, mortgages and vehicle finance. But then when you look at the number of credit agreements, the majority are what is termed in the regulation as credit facilities, and that's really the biggest number of credit agreements that are out there. And credit facilities are really, to make it very simple, it's really credit cards and store cards. We have a very interesting market in that we're still a country where store cards are significantly more than credit cards. If you take markets like the UK, even Brazil, over time, store cards have been replaced with credit cards. So you don't really see the store card market as much. I mean, but in South Africa, we still have, you know, effective almost 3 times the number of store cards and credit cards. And clearly, that's a function of our type of consumer segments that are here. It's a function of the lenders in the store card market that's always been very strong, the clothing retailers. So we have a situation here that is quite unique in that credit cards are a fraction of the total number of credit facilities.
Maybe you could give us a sense, because you're talking about store cards, right? Just so that people have a firmer understanding in their head, because when we think about, you know, an experience of walking into, let's say, one of the TFG shops, for example, let's say Markham's, right? You can carry a TFG loyalty card, but you can also have a Markham's account. So maybe you could give us, like, what are we talking about when we talk about a store card?
Store card, yes. You're right. So store cards typically are cards that, you know, is also sometimes referred to as closed loop. So if you go into a Truworth store, if you go into a Mr. Price store, a Fashini store, an Edgar store, a game store, the game card is one where you're able to shop within game. The Fashini card you mentioned, Markham, is a store card that you can use. only in those particular environments. So a store card is not like a credit card, which is, you know, an open loop system, which is typically Visa or MasterCard branded. It's mainly extended by the banks. Store cards are extended through the retailers. And the idea really is for somebody to walk into an Edgar store, apply for an Edgar's card, and they can shop within that retail chain. So it's limited to, it's primarily limited to the environment in which the credit is open. Now, RCS is unique in this way, and that RCS is almost like a super store card in that you can apply for it at a retail store, but you can use it in multiple stores where we have signed up participating retailers that accept our store card. But yeah, store card is really, and obviously in a store card, you can't have ATM withdrawals and do certain things like you can with a credit card. Credit cards are, as I mentioned, it's open loop. You can typically use it anywhere, but store cards are limited to a set of stores.
One of the things I'm now curious about is, as a proportion of the pie, the 2 trillion rand pie that you just described now, what proportion of that, you know, is being driven by the store cards?
Well, it's less than 10%, you know. So within the category of this pie of 2 trillion, the majority is mortgages and vehicle finance, and credit facilities is less than 200 billion. The last time I checked, so that is 10%. But within credit facilities, the majority again in value is credit cards, because whilst there may be less credit cards, the limits on credit cards are significantly higher. I mean, you can get a limit on a credit card of 100,000, 150,000, whereas store cards typically are a few thousand rand. If you look at clothing retailers, you know, you would get probably around 5,000 rand credit, maybe for very low-risk customers be higher, but the average outstanding balance would be a few thousand rand. So again, you've got this factor of where there's, you know, three times more store cards than credit cards, but the credit card balances are significantly higher. So that 200 billion would be both credit and store cards, but the majority is by far credit cards.
Okay, that it makes sense from that point of view, and especially when you think about the limits, right? Because it is true, there's so few relative to the population, there are so few credit cards in the market. But like you said, I guess the limits is what drives something like that. So maybe because of where RCS is playing, you know, and also where the retailers are playing, players like yourselves and retailers, like the risk that's being taken on, right? Who's responsible for that risk? Is it, let's say, yourselves as RCS, or is there maybe a bank, you know, that's sitting behind either RCS? Because at least I'm not sure how it works in the universe of RCS because of your relationship with BNP. But if I'm a retailer, let's say TFG or whatever it is, is there a bank that's sitting behind and, you know, assuming that book on my behalf? Or are the likes of TFG literally a credit provider that has taken on this and it sits as a book?
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a very, very good question, and the models are different. So let's go to most of the big clothing retailers. If you look at Truworths, if you look at Mr. Price, if you look at Fashini Group, they are funding that debt. They are taking, they're not funding, they are taking the credit risk on that book. So it's on their balance sheet. Obviously, they raise the funding, either through banks, or they, as you know, retailers generate a lot of cash, so they can extend that in credit, or they can go in and raise it in the capital markets. But that's where they get their funding from. But in terms of the risk, it's their balance sheet. They dictate the credit criteria, so they are happy to take on the risk on their book. And obviously, that means that they've got an infrastructure that needs to support that, that needs to assess the people, you know, have the models to be able to assess it. Then you get a situation like Woolworths, where Woolworths Financial Services is in a joint venture with Absa Bank. And here, Absa, I think, a 50+1 share. So they would, I would imagine, is consolidating the debt on their balance sheet. They are the ones that are funding it, but Woolworths Financial Services is running it. And then you have RCS. Now, we are 100% owned by BNP Paribas. We, RCS, as much as we extend credit on behalf of retailers, and we do it for ShopRite Holdings, we do it for Game, we do it for Pick and Pay, and obviously Game's part of Massmart, we do it for Edgar's, for various retail store card brands. The benefit that we have is that it's a completely outsourced kind of consumer finance service that we provide, where we take all the risk, but the retailer gets the benefit of the turnover and the customers that are shopping in their store. So it's all on our balance sheet as well.
Yeah, it's a very interesting space to be in. And I think that ability to take on the risk, you know, probably determines success or failure for a number of different companies. And I guess it's also lends itself to why we've seen a number of buy now, pay later players being able to do well, you know, in a market like this, because you yourself as a, maybe as a small merchant might not be able to take on or to extend any type of credit. But if someone else is willing to give you, I don't know, 98% of a price so that the consumer has, you know, 6 weeks or 2 months to pay or something like that,
yes,
you know, then yes. I guess you have opportunity to what you call this, to close some of those gaps in the market.
Yes. I mean, you know, I think, you know, when you're talking about the market and the things that you want to buy, and you talk about consumption, obviously you can consume through credit, but you can also consume through payment. Now, buy now, pay later is really, it's not classified as credit, it's classified as a payment mechanism where you typically repay in kind of 3 months. The interesting thing about it is that it's not regulated, you know, so, and it's not regulated because the customer is not being charged any interest and fees whilst they are current. The retailer pays for it, quite a healthy commission. But they've been able to almost sneak in when it was quite tough post-COVID, where people, you know, lending went down. People didn't really know how to assess people for credit in this new world of COVID. And you had the BNPL providers coming in where they don't need all these documents. They don't need bank statements. They don't need pay slips. It's an effortless process to be able to approve people, and the approval rates are typically quite high, a short repayment. So it's the customer likes it because there's no cost to them. The retailer is desperate to move product, so they are happy to pay the commission. That's why they've been able to be successful in a short space of time, you know, relative to credit lenders that really had to come back into the market after COVID.
So maybe we're tying a couple of the themes that we've spoken about together, you know, this fact, you know, where your buy now pay later players have come in, and you know, I like the word sneak, you know, into the market that you used. Obviously driven in part by what happened during COVID, you know, and the pandemic. We are sitting in a high inflation, high interest rate, you know, type of environment. We spoke earlier on about the fact that you know, the economy is such a big thing for the new government that's coming in right now. So how bullish are you about South Africa's credit market at the moment? We have said that it's a well-developed market, and it's a big market. But from a growth point of view, right, how stable is the market? How bullish are you about growth in the sector?
Look, at the moment, without a doubt, it is challenging currently in the market. It's challenging to see growth in the market on the retail side. Consumers are obviously they are limited in terms of their income. So it's been a tough period, but the outlook is that interest rates should go down. When the interest rates go down, people are feeling happier to consume credit again. I think for retailers, trade should pick up, things should improve. And if that happens, then, like I said, those are the facets that need to be there for credit to be extended. Look, we are a market that in the past gone through, there was the credit crisis, you had COVID, and through all of those periods, challenging periods, the market rebounded and there's been credit has been extended again, and it will do so again. Credit will definitely come back. What is interesting, though, is that it's not just about credit; it's now also about payment. You've got payments that are happening through wallets. You've got e-commerce. We didn't speak about that. And the what makes me excited as RCS is, predominantly today, e-commerce are really limited to people that have debit cards or credit cards. And that's really people that, as we mentioned, is a minority of people in terms of credit cards. And for debit cards, you need to have cash to be able to use it. And what we've been working on is how do we enable our store cards online for e-commerce payments so we can facilitate a more inclusive market that can shop online. That does not have a credit card and perhaps cash in a debit card to be able to do so. So we've recently enabled our card in the likes of platforms like Zapper. We're working with various payment gateways to enable our store cards to be used online with e-commerce sites. Now, those are things that are not comparable to the past. So we should see growth there because we've never enabled store cards to be used for those particular purposes. So all of these non-comparative things should also lead to growth in the future, certainly for us from a store card market perspective. But there are so many innovations, digital payment at point of sale that's happening more, wallets that are coming out. So many different ways that you can consume credit or payment to facilitate purchases. That I believe we are well positioned to continue to see growth. I think we'll see more people coming into this the ecosystem of payments and credit that will also be able to drive growth, more inclusivity in the market. We'll see more innovation coming through, and all of those should lead to a growing market.
Just a quick point of clarity on my side, just around the e-commerce use of, let's say, the RCS cards. Is
Yes.
that a is that necessarily a debit function, where someone has already funded the card and they're simply drawing down on the facility, or is that an actual credit facility, same as what we see in a physical shop?
Yes, it's exactly the same as it's a credit facility, like exactly like you see in a shop. You see that in online sites, it's very easy to transact with a credit card because every online site will accept Visa and MasterCard. You just need to put it in. The challenge with a store card is that you actually have to specifically create a unique integration for that store card to be accepted in that e-commerce site. And this is what makes it a little bit more challenging to enable store cards relative to credit cards. But it functions just like a credit card. It's just that it's a store card that can be used online and it's credit, as you mentioned correctly.
Okay, cool. Before we let you go then, where we are now, one of the biggest curiosities I have is when we look into the future at areas of growth. You've already highlighted the fact that e-commerce is something that you are particularly bullish about. But I guess it's a two-part question to say, firstly, in the e-commerce space, does it continue being, do you think it's going to continue to be a retail market driven by, let's say, fashion retail? Because in-store credit, I think clothing retail has been a big one. I think also, furniture to some extent, and you know, those types of things. How do you see those trends evolving for the e-commerce side of things as well as in-store, right? Do you think that the South African consumer buying behavior is going to change in any way, or does it continue to be where we were even pre-COVID, where, you know, we are in this paradigm where people, you know, have the clothing accounts, they have the furniture accounts.
Yeah.
Like, does that change? Are there any new areas where you see people taking credit, or does it continue to be growth in the same segments?
That's a good question. I think, look, the traditional, you correctly point out, the traditional credit areas are the likes of clothing, which is big, you're right, and also furniture, not so much in terms of store cards, but in terms of installment loans that finance the furniture. But, you know, if you take our environment in RCS, we are in Game, we are in Builders Warehouse, we are in Macro. These are not clothing retailers or predominantly furniture retailers. So we do extend store card credit in these environments. Pick and Pay also have a multitude of merchandise that you can buy. ShopRite Holdings, we are in the clothing stores, but also the kind of pet stores, baby stores, you know, everything that's got semi-durable, durable products, higher ticket items. This is where credit plays a role. So yes, if you look in the in-store side, clothing will continue to be strong, furniture will continue to be strong, but there are other sectors and other environments, specifically general dealers, FMCG environments where credit is also being used. I think, you know, if you look in that space before I get to e-commerce, I think, you know, it's all about how do you finance something that needs financing, not necessarily in a retail store. You know, it could be anywhere. So, for example, we're seeing a growing trend around financing solar panels because we know it's expensive and people are putting propositions together. Financing fiber wireless network installations, you know. So where there is a need for something to be financed, whether it's in a store or out of store, I think, you know, the uses of credit will expand beyond just the retail environment. And then if we go to e-commerce, you know, there's so much happening. You see the emergence of super apps. You see the emergence, you know, if you look at Fashini Group, they've created Bash, which brings all their brands together on the one e-commerce site, and it's like an online mall. So all of these different kind of aspects will drive some of the e-commerce spend. E-commerce, we've seen Amazon recently come in to give Takealot kind of a run for its money, but also the big retailers like ShopRite Holdings, Pick and Pay, Massmart, they've all evolved their e-commerce capability. I mean, look how well Checker 6060 is doing. So the market in e-commerce is growing. The type of products that are being sold will grow beyond just, you know, I mean, Pick and Pay and Checkers are mainly currently now kind of groceries online, but they will expand into other categories of merchandise, which will make it a more competitive market, even online. And then, like I said, if we can get more individuals, customers to shop online, the collective e-commerce market should grow.
All right. So that's where we end off. It has been a great discussion, just, you know, taking apart the credit market in South Africa and getting a view of, you know, what's actually going on. One of the key things that Regan was, you know, talking to us about is the fact that, you know, in the place that we're at right now, you know, in South Africa, a new government coming into place, regulation and some clarity around some of the regulation, and having, you know, a firm framework that helps the sector to grow is one of the things that they are going to be looking at. Obviously, you know, they are keen to see more people being employed, because the more people that are employed, the more people that have paychecks, the more people that can actually take out, you know, credit of any kind. And in that credit market, he was helping us to understand that we're looking at a pie that's roughly 2 trillion rand big. And guys, 2 trillion rand is huge when you think about the fact that in a normal year, I think SARS is collecting between 1.4 and 1.8 trillion rand. So to know that, you know, the credit market is bigger than that, yeah, that is a huge number to think about. But in that 2 trillion pie, he does say that, you know, roughly 9/10 or 90% is in the vehicle and, you know, home loan space. And the 10%, the roughly 10 or so percent, you know, is in the retail space. And that's where we spent the most time in this discussion, talking about some of the factors that are driving that particular market. Credit cards, as well as store cards, you know, some of the developments that are happening, you know, in that particular space. As RCS, they have a platform that allows for, you know, a person to have a card that they can use as a store card, but across many different stores, you know, and that's also something that they've also brought into the online space, and it works, you know, in a similar space. And he says that's an area of growth that they are looking at, and also at the same time seeing growth in other areas as well beyond clothing, as well as you know, furniture retail. He is excited about, you know, some of the developments you know, that are happening in South Africa's retail sector. And then ending off, you know, just talking about, you know, where we do locate ourselves and where some of that growth is gonna come from. But, you know, at least for now, my feeling is that he is bullish about the credit market in South Africa. Regan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Madiba. It's a pleasure.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.